It's geographically vast and rural. It was held by Democrats for nearly 20 years, most recently by a Republican. But now it's been identified as a seat that could be up for grabs. I'm Susan Sharon, Deputy News Director at Maine Public Radio, and this week on Maine's Political Pulse, we're talking about the race for the 2nd Congressional District. Here to share their insights and observations on that four-way contest are political reporters Steve Missler and Mal Leary. Hello.
Hello.
Steve, let's start with you. There are millions of dollars being spent on this race by outside groups, mostly. So far, most of it appears to be going to Republican incumbent Bruce Poliquin, more than $3 million by the last count. But there's also been more than $1 million spent on his Democratic challenger, Jared Golden. Who's paying for this seat, and how expensive is this race likely to get?
Well, I'm going to start with the second part of your question, which is how expensive. In 2016, outside groups spent over $10 million on this seat, and I would fully expect that in this year that number is going to get eclipsed. So let's just talk about who's been spending money. And this money is being spent, it has been spent since early August. Now, traditionally, these type of races really don't get heated until after Labor Day. That's not the case this year. So on the pro-Golden side, you have the With Honor Fund, which is backed by Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, and some of his family members who have spent over $620,000 so far, which is the most targeted race that group has ever devoted that much money to in any part of the country. The Patriot Majority USA PAC, which is a union-backed PAC, has spent close to $600,000. The DCCC, or the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, is also spending money here. And the House Majority PAC, which is Nancy Pelosi's political committee, is also going to spend at least $1 million here, if not more. On Poliquin's side, you have the Congressional Leadership Fund, which is Paul Ryan's PAC. They've been active here since August. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is running really fluffy ads touting Bruce Poliquin's record in Congress. America First Action, which is a pro-Trump-backed PAC, they're spending money on his behalf, which is interesting in and of itself because we don't even know if Bruce Poliquin even voted for President Trump because he just doesn't want to talk about that. And the National Rifle Association, they haven't got involved yet, but I would expect that they will.
And the reason for all this money being spent, we might add, is that this race has been identified, at least on the Democratic side, as being vulnerable. It could be flipped, right?
That's right. I think it's traditionally a purple district. Democrats held it for 20 years, but it's also very friendly to incumbents, which is good news for Bruce Poliquin.
All right, Mal, so let's boil down some of the main themes of these ads. This is where we're seeing all the money spent. If you live in the 2nd District, you can't turn on the TV without seeing them for weeks now. How are the candidates trying to portray themselves and each other, and how do you see them both being vulnerable?
The polls are reflective of what's going on with all of these ad campaigns. It's a very close race. So you've got Bruce Poliquin, who's trying to portray Jared Golden as too radical to serve.
Golden voted repeatedly to raise taxes and voted to let welfare recipients use your tax dollars to buy tattoos.
You've got Jared Golden trying to portray Bruce Poliquin as out of touch with the district.
Poliquin voted to gut protections for pre-existing conditions and supported cutting $700 billion from Medicare.
While at the same time, they both are running positive ads trying to booster their own image with the voters in the 2nd District.
Fighting for jobs and our economy.
As a Marine in Afghanistan and Iraq, an aide to Susan Collins.
I always say, you know, would you start seeing negative ads right out of the gate in a campaign? That tells me it's a lot closer race than either side is willing to admit, because you don't start trying to paint the other guy as the bad guy until you've actually got yourself known. Now, the reality is you say, well, Bruce Poliquin, he's an incumbent, people know him. Well, that's really not the case. There will be new voters coming on board. There'll be people that have moved into the 2nd District. They don't know who Bruce Poliquin is. So he's got to reintroduce himself to those voters. And, of course, Jared Golden is someone that's not well-known outside of Lewiston, where he represents one of the districts in the legislature. He's got to get that message out. So we're seeing these dueling messages. I mean, I can't believe how many ads have been on. I watched like the 6 o'clock news block and literally seen pro-Poliquin, anti-Poliquin, pro-Golden, anti-Colton, all in the space of 10 minutes.
To build off what Mao was saying is that if you look at the most recent poll that we saw, you have Poliquin underwater in terms of favorability, and then you have Golden, where a third of the people that responded to that poll, which is a New York Times Siena College survey, they don't know who he is. And that gives outside groups the chance to define who he is for voters. And that's what they're trying to do by sort of painting him as this Nancy Pelosi foot soldier who's going to enslave the residents of the second congressional district in welfare programs or something. And then on the other side, you've got Golden portraying Poliquin as this wealthy person who is out of touch with his district and beholden to banking groups and big pharma and what have you. And that's why we're seeing these type of ads right now.
What about the effect of the two independents in the race? We haven't talked about them. How are they going to play out here?
The reality here, Susan, is that the polls that we were just talking about has one glaring problem. It never polls the two independents. Another independent poll that was released earlier this summer did, and had them both in the very small single digits. Now you say single digits, that's not important. Well, it is this year, because for the first time in Maine history, candidates for Congress have to face ranked choice voting. Let's take the scenario where Bruce Poliquin gets 45% on Election Day. Then there's going to be the imposition of ranked choice voting. Where do those voters for Tiffany Bond or Will Hoare go? I mean, they're both campaigning against Bruce Poliquin, but that doesn't mean the people who rank them as their first choice will then rank Jared Golden as their second choice. So leaving out that dynamic that we have from ranked choice voting really brings some of these polling numbers into question.
So where do you see this race going from here? This is a district that went for Donald Trump in the last general election, but for Barack Obama before that. It's also a district that has one of the highest rates of food insecurity in the country, and where voters have approved a hike in the minimum wage and Medicaid expansion, which are both inconsistent with Poliquin or the GOP agenda. So what does that tell you?
Well, that tells me that we have a very interesting electorate in the second congressional district. One of the things that we always fall into the trap of is looking at groups as sort of monoliths. You know, Democrats are all voting for Democrats. Well, they don't. There's a considerable number of Democratic voters every year who vote for the Republican or vote for an independent. Same holds true with Republicans. So one of the major factors here is how much of the other party can you draw, and indeed, how many of those independent voters can you actually get to the polls? Independent voters are the largest group of voters, but they don't vote in very great numbers. Roughly over 40% of the electorate in the second district are independents, but only about 20% of the electorate, those people who actually go out and vote, are independent voters. So there's a lot of motivation that's going to go on to get those independent voters to come to the polls. And if they do, that can have an impact on this race.
To Mal's point regarding the number of independents there, I mean, I think one of the reasons why that district has flipped from Obama to Trump is for the very reason that he just described. And I think that's the same reason why Golden, you've not heard him go out of his way or even mention, I think, Trump. He's not trashing the president. You know, this isn't like the first congressional district where running against Trump and his policies are beneficial. Like, that's the kind of race that Shelley Pingree is probably going to run. But that's not the kind of race that Jared Golden needs to run. And I think there's a good reason for that, which is there's a lot of people who were Trump voters in 2016 that were also Obama voters in 12 and in 08.
We talked about the deluge of television and online ads. Do voters remember those? Do those resonate with people, or do they cancel each other out when there's just so much negativity going back and forth?
That really depends on the voter, because some voters will be tuning out all the political ads. I mean, they were more concerned about the World Series than they are anything to do with what's going on in the congressional race. But one of the things we haven't really talked about in this race is the use of online ads and social media. Now, one thing I've noticed in visiting various websites to do with veterans, every single one of them, there'll be a Jared Golden ad pop up, emphasizing the fact that he's a combat veteran, the same one we've seen on TV, but they pop up on your computer screen when you're visiting that website. I think he's doing a far better job of targeting some of his online ads than what I've seen for Bruce Poliquin, who seems to be more using online ads in the more general sense, like a television ad, to hit a broad audience, as opposed to try to narrowly focus on some of these interest groups.
Jared Golden mentions his military service in virtually every ad that I've seen, and the outside groups that are on working on his behalf are doing the exact same thing. I mean, he's in an ad firing a weapon. He's talking about his use of guns, and he's said on the stump that he's more familiar with guns than Bruce Pollockren or anybody else that he was running against. I mean, that's a very big issue in the 2nd Congressional District. I just wanted to mention one thing that Mal brought up, which is the use of digital ads. I do wonder if the 2nd Congressional race is going to be more the more traditional style of campaigning, where the candidates and campaigns are relying on direct mail, television, and radio, just by virtue of the fact that so many residents in those rural communities especially just aren't connected. They don't have the same level of connectivity as some of the people that live in maybe in the 1st Congressional District.
That's a great point. How important will the upcoming debates be in this race?
Right now, Bruce Pollockren's only agreed to two debates this fall. Contrast that, for example, in the governor's race, where you've got, I believe, 11 debates that are going to occur. So I'm not sure how important they will be. I think what's going to be more important is the coverage of what is said or not said in these debates, because you're not going to have the number and frequency of debates around the 2nd District that you've had in the past.
So history would show in Maine that the 2nd District race traditionally goes to the incumbent. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, in fact, the last incumbent to lose this seat was Daniel McGillicuddy. As far as I know, no relation to Dr. McGillicuddy, who's given us the fine liquors of butterscotch rum or whatever. That seat has not been lost since 1916. History is on Bruce Pollockren's side, even though the dynamics of the race are very, very close.
Well, that's going to have to be the last word on this race for now. Thanks to Maine Public's political reporter Steve Missler and Mal Leary, who will be back again next week to take Maine's political pulse in the race for the 1st Congressional District. You can also find Maine's political pulse on NPR One. Thanks for listening. I'm Susan Sharon, filling in for Irwin Gratz.